Now, you can't have failed to have noticed, can you, that the trails left by planes in the sky do seem to last a lot longer. They lingered around a lot longer these days. Is that something that we should consider to be unusual? Well, many conspiracy theorists certainly believe that it is. And we've discussed this subject on many, many occasions. It is somewhat of a phenomenon, or chemtrails as they are known. And my guest this morning is Andrew Johnson. He is a man who not only has an opinion on chemtrails, he also believes that there is a connection between weather control and even the events of September the 11th, 2001. Well, we need to find out more on this, so let's speak to him now. Good morning to you, Andrew.
Morning, hi.
Right, Andrew, interesting website you've got there, checktheevidence.com. What made you want to get into all of this kind of stuff?
Oh, well, I suppose the history goes back quite a long way for me, because I had a sighting of a UFO, basically, when I was about 9 or 10 years old.
Right.
In fact, there were two objects kind of gyrating around one another.
Mm.
So I, you know, even at that age, I knew a little bit about astronomy. I knew what planets, you know, looked like in the sky, and I knew what the stars looked like in the sky and how they were different. You know, I knew about satellites and things like that. So I knew that they didn't fit any of that description.
Right.
So, you know, I'd always held an interest in perhaps what some people call the paranormal. You know, I'd come to call it the alternative knowledge, you know, really. It's such a vast field when you get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, I think, you know, what happened after that was I used to watch things like, you know, Arthur C. Clarke's World of Strange Mysteries and that,
yeah,
those series like that. And so I kept up with some of the stories in the UFO field and the paranormal field and, you know, these stories of time travel and this sort of thing.
Mm.
But I suppose it was really 2003 where I kind of got much more interested, because I, you know, I always sort of had the sense that there were important things going on which we weren't really told about.
Right.
And I think this was proved to me in 2003 beyond any doubt when I came across Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was that? Just give us a brief overview of that, if you would, please,
yeah,
Andrew.
Sure. Now, what has happened then? In 2001, this guy called Stephen Greer, who is a medical doctor in the USA, based in sort of Virginia, and he'd basically got together a group of 21. Witnesses to UFO events, and, you know, they'd been involved in things like, you know, nuclear weapons deactivation. There's one guy called Robert Salas who was in a capsule underground in North Dakota.
Right.
And, you know, missiles were deactivated when a UFO came over the base, and he told this story in front of a press conference.
What are you saying, that nuclear weapons were deactivated by the unidentified flying object?
Well, that's what, you know, he doesn't say that, but that's the implication.
Right, I see.
And Stephen Greer had gathered together 21 witnesses, and this was put into a press conference. And I never heard anything about this at the time. It was done in 2001, in May 2001, and I never heard anything about it until I came across this internet, you know, website in 2003, you know, which was when I got the broadband internet in this area. So I thought, well, I'll get switched on to that, and it became cheap enough to kind of afford it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found out about this Disclosure Project, and I got the document that accompanied, and that was 500 pages long, you know, 400 witnesses describing all kinds of stuff, you know, working on back-engineered technology and, you know, as I say, the nuclear weapons deactivation.
Right.
You know, even references to stuff on Mars, for example, in one part of this document, which I also sort of came across later on. And so, you know, going through all of that, once I got onto the internet and I had the unlimited access, I was exploring much, much more. And I really, you know, I had no doubt with the Disclosure Project that this was a very, very significant event which had been totally unreported in the press, certainly not here. I think it was reported a bit in the States. They had a few news reports.
Yeah.
But there was nothing here. I looked at the BBC website and found this tiny little pathetic story about it, which completely misrepresented what was said, really.
So this formulated your opinion that what you're given as the official version of events pretty much isn't the case in your opinion.
Yeah, that was basically my thrust. You know, I'd always suspected that there was stuff going on, as I say, but when I came across the scale of this event and the fact that nobody had really talked about it in the mainstream press or in the newspapers, to my knowledge, you know, I knew that things were being deliberately covered up.
Yeah.
Even taking into account, you know, certain things like what was the validity of the witnesses and that sort of thing.
Right.
You know, but because there was so much documentation accompanying this, I really felt that this was a greatly significant, and I ended up, you know, going round and talking about that to various local groups, you know, just because I thought it was so important that no one else had reported on this. I felt I had to do it, you know.
Well, let me just pick up. I'm just looking at the website, and there's plenty of subjects up for debate on there. You've got 9/11, you've got anti-gravity, crop circles, and all that kind of stuff. But the one that I particularly want to look at today is chemtrails. I've spoken to a number of people on these, and I get varying reports back. And the reason that we want to speak to you, Andrew, this morning on City Talk is to find out exactly what you're going to say to them. Tell us in the first days what, you know, for the benefit of those people who do not know what a chemtrail is. Can you describe that for us, please?
Well, basically, a chemtrail, at first glance, you just think it's an ordinary aircraft trail in the sky because, you know, if you've watched aircraft, you'll notice that they leave a trail behind and it's called a contrail, which is short for condensation trail. And you know, the way I explain this to people in simple terms is that if you go out on a cold morning and, you know, you breathe out, then you see you see your breath, basically, which is the water vapor condensing out of your breath in the colder air, and then it will finally sort of merge with the cold air and disappear.
Yep.
And it's essentially the same process which goes on with a jet trail, but of course, because you've got a larger volume of gas coming out and it's hotter, and also it's much higher in the sky, you get a much sort of more persistent trail in terms of, rather than it just being a couple of seconds, it can last for like 10, 20, 30 seconds, maybe a minute.
Right.
And it's also ice crystals that you see, not water droplets, because the air is much colder.
So that's officially what a contrail is?
Correct, a contrail, condensation trail.
Right.
And you know, and if you talk to anybody in official capacity, they will deny that there's anything else coming out of the back of any aircraft.
Right. I have to say, I mean, before we get on to what you believe these things are, and if I go back to my childhood when these things existed then, they certainly didn't seem to linger for the depth of time they do now.
I agree, and I've heard other people say exactly the same. I have a friend in London, and she said she was like totally, avid sunbather. Any time the sun was out, she'd be right out there sunbathing, you know. And she also said that she never saw these trails lasting for literally, it can be hours, actually. You know, I mean, I made a little time-lapse video. This was one of the little, you know, I tried to sort of do a scientific approach to it with the limited equipment I've got. And, you know, I just did a little time-lapse video, and I measured one of these at least 18 minutes long, you know, so I know I've got an exact figure that I can put on this particular case.
Is there no official website that would tell you how long a condensation trail is meant to last?
Well, this is a good question, because I've looked around for this, and basically what you will get is that they will say, oh, they can last for up to an hour, but you don't really see any real explanation for this. Now, I downloaded a report, having corresponded with a chap in the Department of Transport about this subject. This is all on my website, by the way, if you, you know, dig around for it.
Yeah.
And he sent me a link to a report, which was by a chap called Professor Ulrich Schumann of the Institute of Atmospheric Physics, which, you know, he's basically a scientist who looks at, you know, the way clouds form and, you know, the way that the moisture of the air might vary and this sort of thing.
Right.
And so I downloaded this report, which was specifically about persistent contrails. And I read through this report, and it was about 26 pages long. And I looked for a figure which would tell me what the upper limit was for, you know, the persistent time of a contrail. And the only real figure that's in this 26-page report is a figure of about 2 minutes. That's the only specific hard and fast figure that's in there for the duration. It does say, they can last longer than that.
Right.
But it doesn't really say, in these conditions, it will last for half an hour.
So from the tone of your voice here, then, what is being described to you as a bog-standard condensation trail, you're saying, I'm not buying into that, and hence this is where the change comes in, because, the conspiracy theorist, if you like, would say it's a chemtrail. What's the difference between a chemtrail and a contrail?
Well, you mean mainly that there are several differences we can highlight. First, of course, is the persistence and the length of time that it stays for. Also, you can look at the way that the thing spreads out, because a contrail should not really get bigger and bigger and bigger, because some of these will actually spread out and cover quite a region of the sky in 5 minutes. You can see them spread out into quite a wide sort of cloud.
Mm.
And for example, going back to this report that I mentioned, it talks about cirrus cloud and how the contrail can cause cirrus cloud formation.
So they're
kind of mixing together the idea of the jet trail itself with kind of, a separate cloud formation, which is induced by the contrail.
Mm.
So you kind of get this blurring of the explanation, if you will.
Right.
And this is what's in this report, and this is what you see elsewhere.
Right, okay.
And other things, like in a chemtrail, you can see quite often that the pattern is broken. So you'll see a bit of a trail, then an empty space, then a bit more of the trail.
Mm.
And if, the way I argue this is that if we're looking at a trail which is a contrail, then we're looking at, we've got breaks in it, then we've got two possibilities. Either as the plane is flying, they've been switching the engine on and off,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't really make a lot of sense. And in fact, I think if you did that with a civilian aircraft, you wouldn't be a pilot for very long.
No.
If you were deliberately switching the engine on and off. Mm. And if it was going on and off by itself, then you'd be landing pretty quickly to get the fault sorted out.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really make any sense. Mm-hmm. And also, the other way would be that something like the temperature or the humidity of the air is varying and therefore causing the trail formation to break up. And that really doesn't make a lot of sense, because if you look at the length of these breaks, they might be a couple of hundred metres, maybe 300-400 metres, something like that. So that means that you're getting localised temperature variations in the air, or, moisture variations.
Mm.
And that, to me, just doesn't add up, because you just would not get that short kind of space of variation in there.
Okay, Andrew, and it's Andrew Johnson we're speaking to this morning here on City Talk 105.9. We're talking about chemtrails. We've established from what you're saying there that you're not happy with what these things are given as a fictional version of events. If they are not the byproduct of what's coming out of the back of a jetliner, then what are they, and what is the purpose? If they have been manipulated so that they are, if you like, misting the atmosphere, what would be the purpose of that?
Well, that's a very good question, and, as you sort of said in the introduction, there are a lot of theories about that, and I, my basic position is I can't say what they're for, because I don't have the evidence.
Yeah.
If I had a document which had been disclosed to me which said, with photographs, and it showed the equipment that was being used for the spray, and it listed the chemicals that were in them,
mm-hmm.
and it said that, this chemical has this purpose, and this chemical has this purpose, and I could go on to some other reference and check, what these chemicals would normally do in other applications,
mm-hmm.
then I would be happy to say, well, this is what the chemtrails are for. But, I do not have that information.
All right.
So all I can do is really... my view on this is no better than anybody else's.
So you've got to theorise on this one.
Yeah, so this is the theory. If we can just make that distinction, that the chemtrails, as far as I'm concerned, are not a theory, they are a fact.
Yeah.
And somebody is putting something in the atmosphere. I have this silly argument that I use that, what a lot of people say is, well, because you can't say what these things are for, it must just be ordinary aircraft trails. It can't be real, because if you don't know the purpose, then, that means they can't really exist. They must have a purpose, and because you can't tell me what it is.
Right. What are the most common theories for why the atmosphere would be being misted in such a way?
Right. I mean, my sort of best guess at the moment is really it's to do with weather modification.
Right.
I think what the chemtrail compounds are, particularly if we look at the most commonly stated compounds, which there seems to be some reasonably good evidence that you know this is what's in them. It's barium and aluminium. And so, what are those substances? They are metallic substances, the metallic compounds.
Hmm.
And one of the interesting things about barium is, for example, that it's what's called radio opaque. In other words, you know, as some of the listeners might know, if you go into hospital for you know, a stomach check or something like that, they'll give you a barium meal or a barium drink, and then, you know, a few minutes later, you'll go for an X-ray.
Yeah.
And what happens is the barium will stick in the veins or, you know, the stomach or wherever it is.
Right.
And then they photograph the X-ray, and the X-rays don't go through where the barium compound is, you know, in the blood or in the stomach. So, you know, we have to ask, well, why don't they give you an aluminium meal? Why don't they give you a copper meal? Why don't they give you this meal, that meal? It must mean that barium has got some special property, which I think is to do with its particular atomic structure, for example. I think that it has various electrical properties which are, you know, unique. And looking at the other evidence that I've seen for weather modification, which is actually quite prevalent when you go and look for it, and I've got a presentation that I've put together about this.
Okay.
I think that is probably one of the primary functions of chemtrails, is to allow this international, transnational covert group. We don't know who they are, I don't know who they are, but there is a transnational covert group, which one of the uses of chemtrails is to help them to use other equipment or other technology, perhaps a better word, to modify the weather.
So, for the sake of argument then, because obviously we are seeing these contrails, chemtrails, call them what you will, all over the place. I mean, our skies are littered with these things.
Yeah.
Right across the United Kingdom, you would see it. Why would we want to manipulate the weather in the United Kingdom?
Well, really, there are a number of reasons for doing this. One of the primary reasons, well, maybe not the primary reason, but a primary reason I can think of is to control agriculture.
Right.
For example, I gave a presentation about this subject in October in Lithington Towns, a group there. And at the end of that presentation, a lady came up to me, and she was a farmer. And her basic question to me, I knew when I was speaking to her, I just had the intuition that she was going to ask me a question just to get my view, but she already had her own answer. In other words, she wasn't asking me because she didn't have an answer. She just wanted to compare, you know, my answer with hers.
Yeah.
And her question was, what do you think of the weather in August? And I said to her, I think the weather in August was manipulated. Because, as you know, last year we had an extremely wet August.
Yes.
Very unusually wet in most, if not all, parts of the country.
Mm.
And, you know, crops were left in the ground and they weren't able to harvest them.
Right.
And then we had this very peculiar announcement on BBC Radio, I think it was at the beginning of September or maybe a week or two into September. You know, I should have noted the date of this more carefully, but I didn't at the time. And the announcement said, the harvest has been delayed. The harvest has been delayed.
Right.
Which I thought, well, this is a very peculiar announcement. You know, what is this about the harvest being delayed? You know, surely it's up to individual farmers to decide, you know, what's going to be the best time to harvest things. And surely some parts of the country weren't as badly affected as others because, you know, some parts will have had better drainage and this sort of thing.
Right.
So it was just very peculiar. And then, you know, we have companies like Monsanto trying to sell genetically modified crops.
Yeah.
With you know, certain characteristics,
mm-hmm.
And of course, if they're coming along, you know, if we've got the weather going all over the place, then Monsanto or, you know, whoever can say, well, if you look at our crops, you know, they're much more resilient.
Yeah.
You know, they're much more resistant.
But this would imply then, obviously, if you're saying that this is a big operation, this would have to have not necessarily governmental backing, but it would certainly have to have, if you a higher level within the power structure of the country, wouldn't it? You're talking about, if you like, above top secret, this kind of thing going on.
It's a transnational group. it's above government. Mm. You know, I mean, I have this sort of joke saying, and it's this, which, you know, chemtrails, I didn't vote for them.
Yeah.
And once you actually sit down and you look at and analyse the data that's available, you do realise that a lot of what is being said is meaningless.
Right. So let me just play catch up on this for a second, if I could, so I understand where you're going with this. Mm. Right. So what we're saying is that the trails left in the sky by planes, the chemtrails, mm-hmm. are affecting the atmosphere, giving us an unusually wet August at the time when the harvest would come in. It's screwing up the crop. Consequently, you have some company that's turning around and saying, well, we've got a product here. It's a genetically modified piece of it's a genetically modified crop, which, as we know, there's pretty much universal opposition to at the moment.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well, our crop will be resilient to these water conditions, and it will still be ready at the time of the harvest.
Yeah.
So what? And you're saying that what's doing at the moment? So they're basically like screwing up the crop to justify the sale.
I think that, you know, that is complete speculation on my part.
Yeah.
Because,
sure. Yeah.
You know, I don't have any evidence to back that up. But it really fits with the pattern. You know, I'm looking at this from the perspective of 9/11, which I know was a completely set up fake. You know, in terms of Al Qaeda, that's an all complete fake. And what they've got away with on the back of that, this global control group, you know, is just unbelievable.
Let me just stop you there, because I just want to keep up with what you're saying, because I find it fascinating what you're saying, and obviously, like, you know, we are in the realms of speculation here. But are you saying that the misting of the atmosphere, the potential damaging of crops in order to see something else come in, and 9/11 are in some way connected?
Oh, absolutely they are, yes. But just let me take a sort of clarify a couple of points. Because there is a link between 9/11 and weather modification, which people don't actually know about, and it's provable, in my opinion. But basically, let me take a step back. I think with the chemtrails, if they are to do with weather modification, what they're used for is to change the electrical properties of the atmosphere, and they're using other technology, which is thereby allowing them to more easily or more accurately modify the weather once the chemtrailed material is in the atmosphere. That's my general position, the weather modification angle.
Okay.
Before going on to 9/11, I mean, other people talk about, biological warfare, and indeed there's a chap called Clifford Carnicom who's tried to collect samples of material from the ground and from, from plants and things when planes have been over heavily, and he says that he's found in these samples what are called erythrocytes, and erythrocytes are like human red blood cells, so they are biological material. And, you know, he's got a page on his website that lists, you know, it's got some microscope slides that he's done of these samples, and he's had he was a government scientist, so he's got a very scientific approach to analysing things. So, you know, there may be this biowarfare element as well, introducing substances into the environment which are either infective or they may even be, you know, my view is they could be immunosuppressive. In other words, they suppress the immune system and they make us more susceptible to various kinds of infection. And if it's just that, if there's an immunosuppressive effect, whether it's just a basic chemical or whether it's done with biological materials, they're going to get away with it. Because if you just fall ill, you know, more easily, then but there's nothing in your body that's like a poison or a toxin that at high levels that's detectable, then, you know, it's going to be plausible deniability. You know, it's going to be biowarfare without you really realizing it, if you see what I mean. But again, that's speculation on my part. You know, I don't have any documents or evidence to back up.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, I am very open to the possibility of what you're suggesting here. And some people will think, what are you? Why are you some kind of David Icke? Well, no, not necessarily, because you look at it, I mean, there are times, everybody's noticed the weather.
Yeah.
The weather is different in this day and age. Now, some people would attribute that to global warming.
Yeah.
And everybody must have noticed in the sky, what we pointed out there, it never used to look like that when I was a child.
Yeah.
Okay, the other argument would be, well, you know what? We've got an awful lot more air traffic now.
Exactly.
So they could use that things. But I would also say as well, and I'll put this one open for debate if anybody wants to join in with us on the show this morning. 0151 708 1059, our telephone number here at City Talk. If you want to send us a text message, start your message with the word talk. Leave a space, send it to 61025, and you can email me. It's roy@citytalk.fm. Is it not the case that people do seem a lot more lethargic in this day and age? And could that be a byproduct of what you're talking about?
Well, I think the answer to that is yes, but, you know, we can't really prove it because you'd have to wade through a lot of data. You know, I mean, you imagine trying to sort of prove something like that. You'd have to get the medical records from, say, 30 years ago, look at the level of air traffic over a given city or something, and then, you know, get the same...
But sorry to interrupt you, Andrew. The biggest problem you've got with this is that if you are talking about an organisation so powerful, well above governments, then surely those records would be very easy to manipulate.
That potentially they would, yes. I mean, you know,
You're never going to get the bigger picture.
We've definitely got data like this which has been manipulated and covered up, and even false data is injected. Mm. I mean, this brings me on to another point. I did a talk in Liverpool last week, and I talked about the introduction of false information in relation to chemtrails. One example being some chap who has got quite a comprehensive website called Ted Twightmire, and he runs a website called Data for Science. Mm. And he sent out an email last year where he said he had a picture of a chemtrail plane on the ground, you know, one that was involved in the trailing. And he showed this picture of a pod, and, you know, he said, oh, this is the pod, and it's where the chemtrails come out. And then, of course, the next day, somebody pointed out to me that this wasn't a chemtrailing pod, it was actually a refueling pod. And, you know, you get examples of this where people seem to be deliberately putting out false information to actually cloud the good information that we have. Mm. And this guy, you know, I think he's quite intelligent. I don't think it was a simple mistake. I think somebody it was him or somebody who was working in his name was deliberately putting out false information.
And this is nothing unusual, you know, disinformation is nothing unusual. No. And indeed, you know, one of the reasons why the Allies won the Second World War was because of the big project of disinformation.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So, you know, we know that they're trying to cover this up. You know, I know that they're trying to cover this up, I should say. You know, and I mean, I've as you might have seen on the website, I've written to several of the government agencies and got various responses, which are all pretty much the same.
It's an off-the-shelf response.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And, you know, I have had some dialogue. I had quite an interesting dialogue with this chap, as I mentioned, in the Department for Transport, who'd sent me the link to this report. But he just ended up saying that, you know, to suggest that there is this thing going on, it's twisting the evidence and distorting the facts. And I wasn't doing either of those things.
Let me hold it there, Andrew, because I've got to take a break. You are listening to City Talk 105.9. My guest on the phone this morning, Andrew Johnson from the website checktheevidence.com. We're talking about chemtrails, government's conspiracy, or higher than governments, if you like. And we want to get your views on it as well. Perhaps you'd like to join us, 0151 708 1059 with your opinions, or maybe send me a text message. Start your message with the word talk, leave a space, send it to 61025, or you can email me. It's roy@citytalk.fm.
Roy Basnett on City Talk 105.9. Roy Basnett, City Talk 105.9.
The voice of Liverpool.
City Talk 105.9.
Yes, indeed, and a very good morning to you. Roy Basnett here on City Talk 105.9. Don't forget the Sullivan Show's back from 1 today, and if you are the kind of person who likes to keep themselves abreast of information with regards to the entertainment scene, the Sullivan Show is for you. And of course, Dean does like to have a little bit of a rant now and again, so if you want a bit of an opinion mixed in with the arts and entertainment, then the Sullivan Show for you from 1 o'clock today here on City Talk 105.9. But right now it's Roy Basnett here, taking you through until six, and in this hour of the show we are talking to Andrew Johnson, a man who's got an opinion on what those things that come out of the back of planes really are. Yes, you would expect they're exhaust fumes, but not necessarily the case, and we are debating this subject. Andrew, I've got to ask you this to get your opinion of it, really. I mean, obviously, you've pointed out that maybe these things, contrails, the official version or the official terminology to use, you call them chemtrails because you believe as though they are putting something into the atmosphere which may be being used for nefarious reasons. One of the things, I interviewed somebody, and I can't for the life of me remember who it was, that said that one of the reasons why the atmosphere is being misted is because a planet was spotted in 1983. It was so many miles away. It's heading towards the Earth, and now it's considerably a shorter distance away. And that this planet can actually be seen, most prominently, at daybreak and sunset. Now, somebody said to me, that the same person said to me within this interview, that at that time of day, at those times of the day, that you will not be able to see the sun properly because the sky will always be misted by chemtrails. In my personal opinion, I have noticed that this is the case. Have you heard of this theory before? And more importantly, do you subscribe to it, potentially subscribe to it?
Well, there's a couple of problems with that theory as I look at the evidence. The first problem is that if there was a large planet approaching, then, you know, somebody like NASA may well cover it up, but you can bet your bottom dollar that the hundreds of thousands of amateur astronomers around the world
right.
would be, you know, dancing in rings.
That's a good point.
Saying the discovery of this thing. Mm. The other thing that gives me a problem is that although chemtrails are very frequent, they're not a daily occurrence, and you do really get the odd day. It seems to be a while now where I've seen a day with a really clear sky, but there was one day, I think, towards the end of last summer, which was a beautifully clear sky, and there was no trailing at all. Mm. And that in of itself, to me, proves that chemtrails are real, because if you take, say, you know, a given week, and you know that the amount of air traffic passing over a given point is roughly constant. You know, mm. it might vary a bit, you know, just over the weekend or at holiday periods, for example. But, you know, and you'll get some days where there are no trails visible at all.
Right.
You know, I mean, going back to the numbers, really, I've got a video that I made in February last year, and I've got 42 aircraft in 2.5 hours going over the centre of Derby. Mm. And it's just ridiculous that you get that amount of air traffic over somewhere like Derby.
Right.
You know.
Well, let's just come back to the theory again, that perhaps maybe the atmosphere is being manipulated to prevent particularly good harvests, thus heralding the way for genetically modified foods. Now, on the face of it, it seems to me that if you can grow a tomato that is a small tomato, and then you can grow one through genetic modification, which is a huge one, you get a whole lot more tomato for your money. Is that a bad thing?
Well, I think that's, you know, not something I really think about a lot, because, you know, there are many ways that our food is enhanced, not just through GM crops. I mean, you know, the whole idea of adding fertilizer to the soil and, you know, organic growing and this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the whole GM crop issue is one of control. I don't think it's the end product that's so important to these people. It's the issue of control.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at the trend that's happening in society, particularly in this country, is to one of more control, more state interference.
Mm.
Yeah. And you look at the trend that we've had in our lives over, say, the last 40 years, whereby we probably now are much more... we've got a much smaller range of skills in our daily lives and the things that we do. You know, we have somebody to fix that.
And but, technology makes life easier.
Yeah, you know, we used to decorate our own houses more, whereas now we'll probably get somebody in to do it if we've got the money. You know, like you say, technology makes us more dependent.
Mm.
And the state as well is interfering more and more in our lives. So, and as I say, going back to 9/11, that was just to put people in a state of fear.
Mm.
So once you've got people into a state of fear, then
they're easier to control.
You can control them.
Yeah.
And again, going back to this weather control issue, if we look at now we're seeing daily, we see it printed on the side of trucks, we see this carbon footprinting, you have to control your emissions, you have to do this, you have to do that, because if you don't, the climate is going to kill you. That is the basic psychology. You know, I'm sort of exaggerating slightly to make a point.
Yeah, yeah.
But the environmental movement as well, I mean, that's another point I'm probably worth me making. I've written to people like Greenpeace, and I've written to the World Wildlife Fund. I sent them a copy of this report that I put together, which was basically 20 pages long. I had photographs, you know, details of time-lapse studies. I included a DVD with these videos on that I'd made. Sent it round to a load of people, including World Wildlife Fund. What was their reaction? They sent it back to me. So they wasted postage sending this thing back to me when I didn't want it back. You know, I'd made, I'd just made copies for a few pence. So.
And what did you read from that?
Sorry?
What did you take, what did you read into that response?
Well, that they just weren't going to look at it. And in fact, that's what they said in their letter. I mean, you know, again, I posted this letter on my website and getting Greenpeace to look at it. You know, they won't look at it.
Is it possible to suggest then perhaps maybe these organisations are part of a wider conspiracy?
Well, you know, I think at the lower levels you've just got basically good people who want to make a difference.
Yeah.
And this is why the carbon footprinting scam works so well, because people just think, oh, well, it's environmentally friendly, you know, and, you know, I'm saving the planet and I'm switching my lights off. You know, and all of this, and it works very, very well. It's like controlling people through fear and kind of, you know, feeling good, giving them a feel good factor.
It's carrot. It's the donkey and the carrot thing.
It is. But you know, again, you know, I'm sort of digressing slightly from chemtrails. But if you look at the data from NASA, all the planets in the solar system are undergoing changes and have been for the last 30 years.
Yeah, and other planets in our solar system don't have traffic problems. This is the thing. This is interesting.
And then the sunspot issue as well. I mean, the sunspot issue is mentioned in the IPCC report. This is one of my little hobby horses that if you go back in history and you look at the Little Ice Age, which was in the 1600s, and it corresponds precisely with what's called the Maunder Minimum, where there were no sunspots visible on the sun for, I don't know, about 5, 6, 7 years or something like that. Or a very low number compared to what had been observed previously.
I'll be quite honest with you, Andrew, my take on it, I don't buy into global warming.
No.
I don't buy into it. I really, really don't.
Now, if I may just sort of fill in with a very important detail in relation to that, why I know this global warming is a complete scam and we're not being told the truth, and it is to do with 9/11. And what most people don't know is that there was a hurricane closest to New York City at 8 a.m. on the morning of 9/11. It was called Hurricane Erin. And the outer bands of the hurricane were going over Cape Cod, at the end of Cape Cod. And there was dry thunder reported at all three New York airports. And if you go and look at this date and you look at the path of the hurricane, it started on the 1st of September in the Atlantic, sort of out off the coast, quite a way off the coast of the South America, the northern part. And then it went towards Bermuda. It was reported as a Category 3 storm when it was at Bermuda. And then CNN did this report and said, oh, well, you know, it's going out to sea. It's nothing to worry about. And it was indeed going out to sea, but it went in almost a straight line to New York City, and where it was, the winds were the strongest, and it basically slowed down, and then it made a right-hand turn, and on the next day it went and headed out towards Newfoundland. So, you know, if you look at the path of this hurricane and what it had to do with 9/11, and also the fact that the barometric pressure and the wind speed were constant in New York for a period of 24 hours. And we remember we had those beautifully clear blue skies.
Mm-hmm.
My contention is that this essentially proves accurate weather control on 9/11.
Right.
What
are you saying? To make sure that the skies were clear so that the planes could hit the towers?
I think that was one of the reasons, but I don't think planes hit the towers. That's another story, that's another conversation basically.
Well, we certainly want to visit that. I mean, obviously we're not doing it now, but I mean that is obviously our tease for you to come in again, because I would like to get your opinions on it. But
absolutely.
So the weather manipulation on September the 11th, is that the main reason, or is there another reason?
Well, we think there was another reason, but you know, it's perhaps a bit much to get into at this time, because I probably need to, you know, quite a few minutes to sort of go through why. I don't think it was just for the clear skies, basically. There was another reason, and it's really, you know, what this is all about.
If you can condense it into 10 minutes, mate, I'm happy to take it.
Well, if you've got 10 minutes, then that's probably reasonable.
Okay, let's go for it then.
Basically, it's to do with energy. If you look at the way that the weather is modified, it's to do with energy. And one of the areas that people can research into, I mean, I've got this on my website so they can go there, but one of the things that they can look at in terms of energy and the weather is something called orgone energy, mm-hmm. which was kind of discovered by a chap called Wilhelm Reich in the 60s. And he developed this device called a cloud buster, which he used to actually literally modify the weather mm-hmm. by making clouds disappear.
Yeah.
In the cloud, you know, just over his immediate vicinity.
Is this thing where you fire and the thing's up and you see the clouds?
It's different to that. He was using some type of energy.
Right.
The cloud seeding typically uses something
using
like,
the orgone, yeah.
Yeah, the orgone is different. The cloud seeding uses what's called silver iodide, and that was discovered in the 1940s. But, yeah, orgone is different. It's some kind of energy.
Right.
And so basically, you know, we have to make the link between energy, being able to move around energy in the atmosphere, and weather modification.
Okay.
And this one of the early parts of this story is Wilhelm Reich. We then have to look at what actually happened on 9/11 to the towers themselves. Now, you know, I don't know whether you've discussed these ideas on your program before, but. You know, obviously we've got the official story, which just doesn't add up, and I think probably quite a few people are skeptical of that without talking about any of the stuff I've talked about. But you then get into the films like Loose Change and those sorts of films, which describe how there must have been bombs in the building to take the World Trade Center down. When, you know, this is what I thought was correct. It was after I discovered this disclosure project, I started to get into what happened on 9/11. And that was kind of an offshoot of what I was looking at. And then I thought, oh, yeah, well, it must have been bombs because the planes can't have caused the destruction and the jet fuel can't have caused the fires to completely destroy the buildings. But then I realized following that, you know, what actually happened to the buildings is that they turned to dust. They literally turned to dust. And this was pointed out to me by a lady called Dr. Judy Wood, really. It was her studies that switched me on to this. And you've just got to look at it. And, you know, if you've looked at these videos, go back and look at them again and go back and look at the still images. And the buildings turned to dust. They literally turned to dust.
Yeah.
So if you think about that just for a few minutes to yourself, how did that... We can imagine concrete blocks turning to dust, can't we?
Yes.
If you've got a bomb in it, or even a plane crashing into it or something.
Yeah, well, fundamentally, the World Trade Center was a metal construction.
Exactly. You know, and it's the steel that gives the problem, not so much the concrete. But if you look at those buildings, there was over 240 steel columns in them. There was an outer set, which I think was 236, and there was an interior set, which I think was 47.
Yep.
Huge, you know, 1,300-foot long beams, you know, and I actually calculated the total length of steel, 500 miles of steel, if you were to put it all end-to-end in the World Trade Center,
right.
500 miles.
Wow.
And you go and look at the pictures, particularly on Dr. Wood's website, and there is nothing left of those buildings, nothing.
Mm.
And so you then have to ask yourself, you know, I'm trying to take it through in a logical sequence, where did the steel go? What happened to it? Because it should be on the ground in huge, huge volumes. We could see a bit.
Yeah.
But there's really not much at all left if you study the picture record. So what could have made that steel go away? Was it bombs? Was it planes? Was it jet fuel? Or was it something else? You know, you go onto the internet and you search for this, and you'll see people say it was nuclear explosives, micro-nukes, they call them. But then again, you think of a nuclear bomb. What happens with a nuclear bomb? Well, it's extremely loud.
And you get fallout.
Yeah, you get radioactive fallout. You get extremely bright flashes. You know, you've seen these nuclear explosions on film. It's as bright as the sun. It's extremely loud, and you get an enormous wind. And we had none of those things in New York. And we didn't have people who were burned beyond belief. You know, we actually had people who were floating in the dust cloud and... you know, we had one guy filming, and he saw the building coming down. He started running. He's got his camera rolling. Gets under a truck. The dust cloud comes past, and you know, you see it cloud over, and then after a few seconds, it clears a bit.
Yeah.
So we know this guy survived. The camera was still working. It didn't burn the electronics out. You know, it was working. So we know there was virtually no real heat. There was no significant heat. And some people actually reported the cloud was cooler. So what are we left with? It can't be bombs. It can't be nukes. It can't be aeroplanes and jet fuel, because gravity and jet fuel doesn't turn buildings to dust. Whichever way you slice it, they cannot have caused the buildings to turn to dust, okay, which is what happened.
Right.
So we're looking at something else. We're looking at something which is basically totally off the radar screen. And it's really what we've called directed energy. It's a directed energy weapon.
A
directed energy weapon.
Right.
Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, this is just, who is this guy? He's just completely nuts, you know.
I've long predicted directed energy weapons.
Sorry?
I've long predicted that they would happen.
That's very interesting. And, you look at this, and what most people don't realise as well is that this has been the subject of a court case by Dr. Judy Wood, and I've sort of had some sort of sideline involvement with that. And she actually has sued NIST, NIST is the National Institute for Standards and Technology, and they produced the reports on the World Trade Center's destruction. And she's basically sued them because her main point is that the towers did not collapse. NIST entitled their reports the collapse of the World Trade Center, but the towers didn't actually collapse. They just went away. They turned to dust. And if you watch the videos, you'll see this quite clearly.
Yeah.
Particularly with this thing called that there's been termed the spire, which is a 70-story column of steel which just literally disappears.
Yeah. That's your centre column of it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And so we then look at NIST contractors. In other words, what I mean by that is that when NIST produced their 10,000 pages of reports on the World Trade Center destruction, they used some contractors. And among those contractors were three companies: Boeing, another company called SAIC, which is Science Applications International Corporation, and ARA, which is the Applied Research Associates. And I think there was one other company which I forget which comes into this. But all three of those companies are involved in research or manufacture of directed energy weapons. Now, that's not a conspiracy theory. That is a fact.
Right.
And you can go and check this on the website. So, basically now, we're in the realms of energy, directed energy, and we therefore have to look for what form of directed energy it was. Now, a lot of people have tried to write this off as saying, oh, you know, these silly people are saying that it was, a space laser.
Yeah.
No, we haven't mentioned the word laser. We've mentioned directed energy, and indeed we know what lasers do. They heat things up, they melt materials, but again,
they don't turn them to dust.
Exactly. They do not turn that quantity of material to dust. So it's a different type of weapon.
Right.
So we then look at the other evidence at the World Trade Center. And as Dr. Wood has done over the last couple of years, she's looked at thousands of pictures, and she's posted the most important ones on her website. It's all available for public scrutiny. She's not tried to hide anything away. You know, she's put this information out there. We're getting a lot of detractors coming along with no credentials saying that this is just complete nonsense. But they don't have their own website, and they don't have an explanation for the evidence. One of the aspects of the evidence is inverted cars which are upside down. Mm-hmm. We've got pictures about 5 or 10 cars which are literally, you know, on their roofs. And in some cases, they're next to ones which are not on their roofs. And, of course, people then want to say, well, you know, the towers came down, there was this huge blast of wind, and that's what turned the cars upside down. But this doesn't make any sense because, as I say, we've got one car upside down, next one right way up. Hmm. And then we've got trees in the background with all the leaves on. So if there was a hurricane-force wind, you know, I'm talking about in the centre of New York, not out in the Atlantic, then why aren't all of the cars in chaos?
Okay. I'm sorry, obviously, because I said 10 minutes on this, because we will run out of time on it, but just saying, where would this weapon have been housed?
We don't know, is the answer. That we don't have an answer for that.
So what you're saying, so the planes didn't play a part in it, and it's all part of this directed energy weaponry, if you like.
This is one of the key factors that you've got to consider. Now, you know, again, we'll probably need to talk about the plane issue at another
time. Yeah,
definitely,
yeah.
But there is a link between the plane issue and the energy issue as a summary, which I could, you know, I can discuss.
Yeah.
We've got some hard data to back that up.
Okay.
So, you know, and this is where it all ties into energy and the energy of the weather modification. And the hurricane, we think, did have an energy function, if I can put it like that.
Well, okay. Well, listen, unfortunately, time is going to beat us on this one, I'm afraid. But I would like to continue this at a later date, if that's okay with you, Andrew.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just please, for anybody who wants to find out more about what you're saying, how can they do that?
Yeah, if you go to the checktheevidence.com and you'll find a range of articles on there, and look in the 9/11 section if you want to find out more about this, or even better, probably, if you go to Dr. Wood's own website, because she's really the person that's put all the data together for this, and it's really laid out for her, for you to look at, and she's laid it out for you.
Yeah.
And I've written some articles which kind of, you know, just put a few words onto the pictures, basically.
Yeah, great stuff. Right. Well, listen, Andrew, great to speak to you this morning. Really, really do appreciate it. I found it fascinating. And, of course, anybody that's listening at the moment may want to make comment themselves. We'll continue the debate if you want to. 01517081059 is our telephone number. Send us a text if you like on this. Let me know your opinions. Start your message with the word talk. Leave a space. Send us a 61025 or you can email me. It's roy@citytalk.fm. Andrew Johnson, thank you very much indeed for spending some time with us on City Talk.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been really good. Thank you.
Roy Bassett on City Talk 105.9. It's cold in-